your weekend destination.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Laurel Bowman. With prayers, flowers, and flags draped in black ribbons, Japan on Tuesday said farewell to Shinzo Abe. He was a polarizing figure who dominated politics as the country's longest-serving premier before being gunned down at a campaign rally last week. Crowds packed pavements lined with a heavy police presence as the hearse carrying Abe, who died at age 67, departed from a central Tokyo temple on a procession through the city. Ex-Finance Minister Rishi Sunak, the favorite to become Britain's next prime minister, kicked off his campaign on Tuesday, promising honesty in an increasingly testy and divisive battle to succeed Boris Johnson. An initial 11 candidates put their names forward to become leader of the governing Conservative Party and Britain's next premier after Johnson was forced to say he would step down when support drained from him over a series of scandals. Sri Lankan immigration officials stopped the president's brother and former finance minister Basil Rajapaksa from flying out of the country on Tuesday as anger mounted over the island's worst economic crisis in decades. It was not clear where Rajapaksa, who also holds U.S. citizenship, was trying to go. He resigned as finance minister in early April as street protests surged against shortages of fuel, food, and other necessities, and he quit his seat in parliament in June. Ukraine expects a fresh assault by Russian ground forces following widespread shelling, which killed more than 30 people, as Kyiv's Western allies brace for a worsening of the global energy crisis if Russia cuts its supply of oil and gas. This is VOA News. The European Union has so far frozen 13.8 billion euros worth of assets held by Russian oligarchs, other individuals, and entities sanctioned for Moscow's war against Ukraine, the bloc's top justice official said Tuesday. The official said the vast majority of that comes from five of the EU's 27 member states only, calling on the others to step up. The bloc currently has 98 entities and over 1,100 individuals blacklisted for Russia's role in Ukraine. European Union finance ministers on Tuesday formally approved Croatia becoming the 20th member of the Euro common currency at the start of 2023. The European Council, the grouping of 27 EU governments, adopted three legal acts required to allow Croatia to introduce the euro on January 1st. Croatia has been an EU member since 2013. The Philippines reaffirmed on Tuesday that it had the legal high ground over China in a long-running maritime row. This marked the anniversary of an arbitration ruling that concluded Beijing's claim to almost the entire South China Sea was groundless. Following a heated standoff with China, the Philippines took the bold step in 2013 of lodging a case with the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague, seeking clarification of its sovereign entitlements under international law. NASA officials gathered on Tuesday to unveil more of their initial showcase from the James Webb Space Telescope, the largest and most powerful orbital observatory ever launched. The first batch of full-color, high-resolution pictures were selected by NASA to provide compelling early images from Webb's major areas of inquiry. The $9 billion infrared telescope is expected to revolutionize astronomy by allowing scientists to peer farther than before and with greater clarity into the cosmos to the dawn of the known universe. Astronomers plan to use the telescope to explore the evolution of galaxies, the life cycles of stars, the atmospheres of distant exoplanets, and the moons of our outer solar system. Webb is about 100 times more sensitive than its 30-year-old predecessor, the Hubble Space Telescope. For more on these and other stories making international news today, please visit our website at voanews.com. We also have an app that you can download. Just search for VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Laurel Bowman for VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We have spent far too long time discussing the place of Africa in our continent without discussing our place in the world and projecting our interests outwards.
That was Ghana's permanent representative to the European Union on the need for Africa to assert its collective economic power and show good governance. Details coming up. Oh, we'll have these stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. On July 31st, Senegal holds legislative elections. The campaign period has just opened up. Reporter Alpha Jallo in Dakar spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson on the campaign and the mood in the country.
Well, this is the parliamentary elections, or what it is known here as national assembly elections, and it's slated on the 30th of July. But the campaigning just kick-started just about 2 days ago. And because of this year's campaigning coincided with Eid, so, the activities are very low-key. So political parties have not yet started, you know, holding big rallies. And you cannot even feel that there's even campaigning around town, because there are few movements of people. Most people have traveled to the provinces to celebrate it with their loved ones and their families.
Tell us a little bit about sort of the mood in the country ahead of the election. Is everything calm? Are people, you know, excited about the election?
Yes, there are mixed feelings about the mood of the elections in town. Some people are excited, but some people are still, they are afraid that the elections might be, if the campaigning starts, there might be violence. As you can recall, during the pre-campaigning time, there were some violent demonstrations here which led to three people being killed. And the people are also thinking that, as campaigning starts, maybe there will be some violence, there will be an outbreak of violence. But already you have an organization that is called themselves, you know, Gejowa Hip Hop. This is an organization that is trying to sensitize both the politicians and the ordinary people so that they can stay away from creating violence. In fact, they are now, yesterday, they were going around in the suburb of Dakar, in the outskirts, when we call the suburbs of Dakar. These are one of the densely populated areas in Dakar, and which are very prone to violence whenever there is a demonstration or whether there is some kind of rioting. So they have been talking to youth that they should be very, very, they should be very careful. All they need to do is let them go and pick up their voter's card. And during voting day, they can go and vote for the candidate of their choice and then go home and wait for the announcement of the results. But again, we all think that, you know, Senegal is a multifaceted society. We also have been seeing that some, you know, high-profile religious leaders, they are also calling for calm. They are also calling for the politicians to make sure that they will campaign, a violence-free campaign.
That was journalist Alpha Jallo in Dakar. He spoke with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, says the government will increase funding to grow more wheat after protests over wheat shortages and price hikes sparked by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Before Russia's Black Sea blockade, Cameroon imported 60% of its wheat from Ukraine. The cutoff has led to a nearly 50% increase in the price of bread, as Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon government says President Paul Biya on Monday ordered an immediate disbursement of over $15 million to grow wheat in the Central African state. Gabriel Mbarobe is Cameroon's agriculture minister. He says Biya responded to pleas from civilians that the cost of living is becoming very high and many Cameroonians are finding it very difficult to put food on the table.
Les statistiques révèlent que chaque Camerounais consomme 33 kilos.
Mbarobe says Russia's war in Ukraine has completely disrupted supply chains of consumer goods, especially wheat, which is the main staple food in Cameroon. He says investing in wheat production is a wise decision because each Cameroonian consumes 33 kilograms of wheat each year, which is far more than 23 kilograms of rice each Cameroonian eats annually. He says wheat can be grown in several places in Cameroon. The government says Cameroon produces less than one-fourth of the 1.6 million tons of wheat it needs each year. Last year, the government imported more than 850,000 tons from Russia and Ukraine. Now, according to the Cameroon Importers Union, up to 25,000 tons have been imported since January 2022. Mbarobe says while the nation waits for its own newly planted wheat to be harvested before the end of the year, local substitutes like sweet potato, cassava, and yams should replace the wheat Cameroon imports from Russia and Ukraine. Cameroon says while baking bread, bakers should replace imported wheat with local substitutes such as cassava, yams, and potato. Biya's instructions for more than $15 million to be invested to grow more wheat comes after several weeks of nationwide protests against cereal shortages. The shortage of wheat has led to a close to 50% increase in the price of bread. Delo Magelin Kamsu Kamgeng is the president of Cameroon's Consumers League. He says his league organized the protest to force the government to take immediate actions that will reduce growing hunger and anger among civilians.
Le COVID a des conséquences qui sur le marché international.
Kamgeng says after COVID-19, Russia's war in Ukraine is leading to severe food shortages and unprecedented hikes in the prices of imported staple foods like cereals. He says people are hungry and unable to afford bread, which is consumed by a majority of households in Cameroon. Kamgeng says the government should dialogue with its citizens and take measures that will stop a looming famine. Kamgen said the government should provide fertilizers and substitutes to local farmers to increase plantain, rice, yam, and cassava production. Kamgen said the war in Ukraine, though causing sufferings, should provide an opportunity for Cameroon to invest in its local industries and stop our dependency on imports. The government says the money ordered by Biya will either be used in buying fertilizers or paid out as subsidies to wheat farmers. Some of the money will be used to purchase tractors. The UN reports that 1.7 billion people in 107 economies, including 41 African countries, are exposed to either rising food prices, rising energy prices, or tightening financial conditions as a result of Russia's war in Ukraine. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Global oil markets have already felt the pinch of Libyan oil shutdowns helped along by Russian mercenaries. Foreign Policy magazine says Wagner fighters remain entrenched in and around key military bases and oil facilities in Libya as guns for hire for Khalifa Haftar's Libyan National Army. Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, explained the way out to stop using Libyan oil shutdowns as a political weapon to VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi.
So this has long been a significant issue in Libya, that different armed groups and political groups can shut down the oil on which Libya, you know, is very heavily reliant for its economic stability. We're seeing the latest protests and shutdowns, which have been going on since mid-April. And we've also seen additional protests and additional shutdowns in the last couple of weeks. Now, there doesn't seem to be any end in sight for those protests ending. The way out, so the US has been trying to push a mechanism to sort of control the oil revenue so that it would be a transparent and fair mechanism that wouldn't be linked directly to either of the competing governments. And it's felt that this could be a good way to remove the oil revenues from being politicized. However, at the moment, that hasn't managed to gain any traction. And part of the problem is obviously any mechanism like that needs the agreement of all these rival parties. And instead of seeing a trend towards greater agreement and cooperation, what we're actually seeing at the moment is a move towards greater economic division. We're seeing divisions opening up again between the central bank in Tripoli and the central bank in eastern Libya. And unfortunately, particularly with the potential for Bashar Aga to move on Tripoli, we're moving increasingly towards a situation where we could see Libya becoming really divided between East and West in terms of economic issues, political issues. And at the moment, although there is kind of an international push to have a financial mechanism, we're not seeing any kind of strong international pressure or strong international unity that could help to put pressure on Libyan actors to stop using oil as a political weapon.
Would Putin succeed in preventing Libyan oil production from filling the market gap resulting from the invasion of Ukraine?
So the Russian element is interesting. So we know that there are Wagner operatives in Libya, and they are certainly based in some cases in and around the oil facilities. However, despite some of the recent reports, there's less clear evidence at the moment that the Wagner fighters are directly involved in any of the current shutdowns. It is certainly in their interest, it's certainly in Russian interest, that you know, Libyan gas and oil is off the market. And it may well be that if there is an international push to try and get the oil back online, the Russia may seek to use its influence in there to try and entrench some of those shutdowns. But I think at the moment, this is more an oil blockade that's being led by Libyan actors and Libyan frustrations over the situation in Libya that Russia is making the most of in terms of those opportunities, rather than being something that's being driven by Russia at this point in time.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. Eminent English primatologist and anthropologist Dr. Jane Goodall is to be honored with her own Barbie doll. The doll was launched yesterday by toy maker Mattel just ahead of World Chimpanzee Day on Thursday. It comes with a chimp accessory modeled on David Graybeard, the chimpanzee studied by Goodall in her groundbreaking research into emotion and communication in animals. The renowned conservationist and founder of the Jane Goodall Institute is delighted with her doll. She says she had been suggesting it for a long time to show that girls don't want just to be film stars, and that many of them want to be out in nature studying animals. The launch also coincides with the 62nd year anniversary of Goodall's first journey to the forest of Gombe National Park in Tanzania. Mali's military government has arrested nearly 50 Ivorian troops who provide support to a contingent of the UN mission, calling them mercenaries. Annie Reisenberg reports from Bamako, Mali.
Mali's military government arrested 49 soldiers from Ivory Coast on their arrival at Bamako's airport Sunday evening, accusing them of being mercenaries. Government spokesperson Abdoulaye Maiga read an official statement on state TV ORTM Monday night, which was posted to the station's Facebook page.
Le gouvernement de la transition les considère.
He says the transitional government considers them mercenaries as defined by the African Union Convention on the Elimination of Mercenaryism in Africa. Maiga says the soldiers were working for Sahelian Aviation Services, a company contracted by Mali's UN mission. He asked during the address that the company leave Malian territory immediately. Rumors circulated on pro-government social media accounts Monday of an attempted coup d'etat, which the military government did not address or clarify, only accusing the soldiers of planning to break the dynamics of the refoundation and security of Mali. MIGA references a 1977 African Union convention aimed at eliminating mercenaries on African soil due to the grave threat which the activities of mercenaries present to the independence, sovereignty, territorial integrity, and harmonious development of African Union member states. Mali's military government itself has been accused of working with mercenaries from the Russian Wagner Group. They have continually denied the presence of mercenaries, claiming to work only with Russian instructors. However, in several incidents in central and northern Mali, locals have told journalists and human rights groups they have seen Russian mercenaries committing human rights abuses while working with the Malian army. Olivier Salgado, spokesperson for the UN mission to Mali, MINUSMA, tweeted on Monday that soldiers are not part of one of the contingents of MINUSMA, but are logistical support on behalf of one of our contingents. MINUSMA's mandate was renewed last month, though the Malian representative to the UN said during a Security Council meeting the government will not allow them to carry out investigations of human rights abuse accusations, a part of their mandate. Sanctions imposed in January by ECOWAS, the regional bloc, were lifted in July after the junta proposed a 2024 election plan. The lifting of sanctions allowed ambassadors from neighboring states to return to Bamako and opened borders between Mali and ECOWAS countries, including Ivory Coast. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. The daughter of Nigerian immigrants has emerged as a candidate to replace Boris Johnson as Britain's prime minister. Kemi Badenoch, a rising star in right-wing politics, is among 11 declared candidates for the top spot with no clear favorites. She was elected to Parliament for the first time in 2017 and has held junior ministerial jobs, most recently as Minister for Equalities, but has never served in cabinet. The 42-year-old Badenoch has said she believes the government has lost its way. She wants limited government, lower taxes, tighter spending, and a focus on the essentials. Her father, Femi Adigoki, died from a brain tumor 5 months ago. She says he instilled in her a sense of personal responsibility. The new leader will be chosen in a two-stage election by the 358 conservative lawmakers and then the whole conservative membership. One of Africa's most prominent representatives in Europe says the fallout from the war in Ukraine is causing the West to increasingly regard the continent as an economic motor. Ghana's permanent representative to the European Union, Harriet Boateng, says it's up to Africa to assert its collective economic power by taking ownership of its resources and by demonstrating good governance. Darren Taylor reports.
Harriet Sena Sior Boateng says she's seen a gradual but meaningful embrace of Africa and things African in Europe over the past 5 years or so.
I just got back from Lisbon and I was telling everybody from the airport through to the hotel, the restaurants, in every corridor, there was the Afrobeats. And you can imagine how many Europeans were singing, even tunes that I couldn't mention, these Yoruba words, they were singing. And I was so amazed.
The Oxford University-educated barrister and solicitor has been Ghana's EU head of mission and ambassador to Belgium and Luxembourg since 2019.
We have spent far too long time discussing the place of Africa in our continent without discussing our place in the world and projecting our interests outwards. This notwithstanding, the extent of Africa's diplomatic influence depends on being able to sustain common positions. This requires a capacity first to identify what Africa's interests are and then to articulate them.
Boateng's vision is for African governments to stop prioritizing bilateral relations with richer countries in favor of stronger relationships with fellows on the continent. She's a key figure in negotiations around the Cotonou Agreement between the EU and the African, Caribbean, and Pacific states, the so-called ACP countries. Some of the treaty's aims are to reduce poverty and to integrate the ACP countries into the global economy. Boateng's experience in these talks has shown her that Africa no longer allows external values to be imposed on it.
During our recent negotiations, the EU came under intense and immense pressure. The EU member states had to make concessions on issues of sexuality, marriage, and gender. Our values on these issues are deeply rooted in the fabric of many African societies, and it is both unfair and patronizing for Europe simply to characterize our approach as a leftover colonial rule. We did not accept that, and we pushed them back on that. We told them what was red lines, and those could not be crossed. Marriage, gender, and sexuality had to be respected through the lenses of an African.
Boateng wants Africa to take a similarly strong position when dealing with questions of trade, for example, with powerful regions. Like it or not, she says, Africans all too often feel their views and positions are inferior.
Africa can best represent its values to the world when it stops feeling the need to apologize for them. When you have to start explaining or justifying yourself, you have already lost the argument.
Despite the challenges and the negativity raised every time there's conflict or a coup on the continent, Boateng's confident.
Africa will undoubtedly be a diplomatic force of the 21st century. Our young population and our growing middle class are unstoppable political forces.
Boateng is, however, the first to acknowledge that such forces won't just fall into Africa's lap, and that they need to be won by gaining the respect of the world, and especially of the powerful economic blocs. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Malawi is in the midst of a large-scale relocation project for more than 200 elephants. Pachydermis at Liwondo National Park are being hoisted onto trucks and driven across the country to Kasingo National Park. This move aims to tackle overpopulation in Liwonde, where some elephants have become a nuisance, straying into gardens and damaging crops. Authorities hope to relocate at least 250 elephants by the end of this month. This is the second translocation in 3 years, with 300 elephants moved to Nkotakota Game Reserve in 2019. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.